Caroline Gamble, and welcome to this episode of Sensemaking in a Changing World podcast. Join me each week in conversation with leading permaculture-related educators, thinkers, activists, authors, designers, and practitioners to explore the kind of thinking and action we need to navigate a positive and regenerative way forward, to myceliate possibilities and share ideas of what a thriving one-planet way of life could look like. My guests offer voices of clarity and common sense. My guest today is a young regenerative entrepreneur, Ben Moody, with a big vision to clean the seas. Through his innovative business model, he's helped to remove over 2 million kilograms of plastic from the ocean, so far working directly with a number of countries in Asia, engaging with local communities and creating positive local employment. He and his partners buy plastic credits, which they use to sponsor this work. So listen in and discover what they're doing and how they're making this happen. Let me begin first by acknowledging that I'm recording this episode on the beautiful land of the Gunnakurnai people. This Sense Making in a Changing World podcast is a project of the Permaculture Education Institute. We teach permaculture design, teaching and livelihood skills online to people on 6 continents who in turn localize and enrich it and find appropriate ways to apply the planet care ethics of earth care, people care and fair share wherever they are. Before we jump in, I'd like to invite you to subscribe to the Sense Making in a Changing World podcast on your favorite podcast app. Share this episode freely and do leave us a 5-star review and a lovely comment because it really does help people find this podcast. All right, well, let's turn to this inspiring chat with Ben Moody. So I read in your overview of 7 Clean Seas, which is what you co-founded, that part of your goal or one of your key missions is to help clean up the 7 most polluted countries, being particularly focused on plastic and ocean. So do a bit of a deep dive on what the vision and mission is for 7 Clean Seas and yeah, really where it came from.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for setting me up on that one. So 7 Clean Seas is a company that is in love with the ocean. And our mission, you know, the guiding star of everything that we do within the organization, whether it's, you know, whether it's sales or marketing or operations or finance, the guiding star to kind of what we do is an ocean without plastic. Picture it. And anyone we work with, anybody that joins the company, Tom and myself founding the company, we go off that vision and we build off that vision as well. And I think to get to that goal or that kind of guiding North Star, we then have set kind of incremental goals leading up to that. So we've got the first goal, which is remove 10 million kilos of plastic by 2025 and employ 200 formal workers from the waste management sector within 7 Clean Seas. Those kind of 3 things that I mentioned there with the mission and then the 2 goals drives all of the work that we do at 7 Clean Seas in tackling the plastic pollution problem. We achieve these kind of goals by partnering with businesses and individuals to almost co-create sustainability initiatives, target those companies and individuals to you know, measure, reduce, and then compensate for the plastic they do use. In the process of doing that, we build ocean impact projects in some of the worst polluting countries globally. And we target those countries to have the largest kind of impact on an environmental level, as well as the social level. And hopefully those goals reflect that from the 10 million kilos removed from the ocean and hiring 200 formal workers from the formal waste management sector as well.
Yeah, that's great. But there's lots of questions that I want to ask you, but there's one that's kind of burning that I want to ask you. From where you sit or swim, what is the state of plastic pollution in the oceans at this point?
So where I'm swimming right now, I love a good pun. So where I'm swimming right now, there's 11 million metric tons of plastic waste that enter the ocean every single year. And that's a huge, huge amount of plastic going in. And I really dislike that figure because you're like, oh, 11 million metric tons. Gosh, that's a lot of plastic. But what we try and do at 7 Clean Seas is take that number and kind of morph it into different things so it's a bit more tangible. So we can really connect with consumers and connect with businesses. So there's a few other stats that I really like instead of the enormous kind of 11 million metric tons headline is that a garbage truck of plastic enters the ocean every single minute. And that by 2050, there'll be more plastic than fish in the sea. And I think, you know, just those two things alone is enough to really summarize the problem that we're facing and really summarize kind of the amount of work and the solutions that we need to focus on in terms of, firstly, tackling the problem systemically by reducing plastic, but then also tackling it on the ground, you know, the mess that we've already made and the systems that we already haven't implemented. You know, we need to work in conjunction with each other to, what I like to say is, turn off the tap whilst mopping up the floor as well. So
yeah, you've got to do both hands.
Exactly.
Before we head off from the stats, and I'm also really curious to know, what are you seeing the biggest parts of that plastic pollution? Like, what are those top polluting sources? Like, what's the main kind of plastic in there?
That is a fantastic question. People usually say that is a fantastic question when they don't know how to answer the question, because, and I don't know how to answer that question because if you, depending on the location, depending on whether you're out in the open ocean, depending on whether you're focusing in on a community in Indonesia or a community in Thailand, or even the amount of waste generated in Singapore, for example, there's going to be very different waste profiles. So from the experience within our island projects, which are in Indonesia. If you want to see photos of that and not just listen to my voice, go and check out our Instagram or LinkedIn or any social media on Seven Clean Seas. But the waste that we usually find, we find a lot of fabrics, you know, a lot of polymers, kind of plastic fabric polymers, a lot of wrappers as well, which make up a large conjunction of that waste. And then more in the fishing villages, we actually find a lot of fishing gear. Just from the kind of subsistence fishing communities that live there as well, which makes a lot of sense. But in addition to that, a really strange one is that we find a lot of flip-flops, single flip-flops. You know, that I think it's very telling of kind of the throwaway culture that a lot of consumer brands generate, is that actually a lot of this kind of packaging in some circumstances isn't needed. And I think that's why I like to separate the problem a little bit more and say, actually, you know, there's a lot of plastic that we need, you know, in pharmaceuticals, in hygiene for food waste as well, particularly. But there's also a lot of plastic that we don't need. Right. You know, I've seen plastic wrapped bananas before.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, isn't it? The thing that I didn't hear you say then was bottles, and I would imagine that would be one of the number one things that you just see floating around.
So if bottles have the cap on, they float, but as soon as the cap becomes loose, they fill up with water and they sink. A lot of plastic does sink, especially when we're looking at rivers. You can only see a small percentage of that plastic that actually really crops up, which floats. So that's also another issue that I think we're looking at trying to tackle is, okay, well, yeah, sure, we can clean up the kind of shorelines and clean up the rivers, but the way that we're going to really stop and clean the oceans is on land in the communities and prevent that plastic even getting or even touching the environment in the first place. Yeah. So that's what I think I'm really passionate about, and how Seven Clean Seas has evolved over the last few years in cleaning coastlines, then cleaning rivers, and then looking at communities and implementing very solid systems to collect that plastic up. Yeah, so it is quite surprising. But
yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. A systemic approach is so essential. You can't just keep cleaning up when the flood keeps coming and you just go like constantly just cleaning up the end part. And so it's like looking at, yeah, where it's coming from, changing the practices, looking at a whole theory of change. And I wonder how you're addressing that, because I know from, you know, in reading the work that you do, that you have a lot of engagement with local communities. How are you managing to stop the flow, and how are you managing to even talk with companies perhaps to get a shift on that? And how have you noticed the shift in the types of plastic? Like, is the biodegradable plastic coming, like changing things as well?
Interesting. Okay, so I'll tackle that last question first on the biodegradable plastic. In the countries that we operate, we don't see a very large proportion of bioplastics just yet. And to be honest, we could do an entire podcast on bioplastics if you really wanted to, but because there's so much to get into it. But I will say that, you know, bioplastics are great in some circumstances, and those circumstances when there is a, you know, industrial biodigester that can actually break down those bioplastics, and when those bioplastics are recollected and centralized, sorted, separated, and then kind of biodigested. Where bioplastics don't work is when they band-aid the plastic pollution problem and say, okay, well, actually, we're just going to not put this water in a PET water bottle, but we're going to put it in a bioplastic water bottle and then ship it into a market that doesn't have any collection systems, because that plastic, whether it's bioplastic or not, is still going to end up in the environment. And actually, if you kept your, you know, water in a PET bottle, it's then more likely to be collected because that PET has a secondary value on a secondary market. So it's a really difficult topic. I won't spend too much longer on it, but you know, bioplastics are great in some circumstances and not so great in other circumstances or other countries or where the systems aren't in place. So that was that last question first. And then going back to kind of how we work with communities and then how we work with businesses. So I'll start with the communities first, because it's something that we need to get better at talking about, to be completely honest with you. You know, we've got really close relationships with all of the communities that we operate in. This is something that is quite close to my heart when we're setting up projects. You know, we always talk and consult with the communities first to really understand, okay, well, what are the issues are you facing and what's going to help you care about this problem? And I think if you can connect the plastics issue or the issue that you're trying to solve with a personal issue within a community or within a government or with an individual, they're more likely to care about that issue. And it may seem really self-explanatory, but actually you'll be surprised at how many kind of impact initiatives just go into a scenario and say, you need this because we say you need it and this is a problem, and completely disregard the fact that actually these people might not even care about that issue. You care about it, so you need them to solve it. So I think that's a really important part, whether you're setting up an NGO or whether you're setting up a charity initiative or a social enterprise, is, do I really understand the issue that I'm trying to solve in this context? And if you understand it in the context, you then are able to work with local governments, the local regency governments, help them understand the issue personally, as well as then from a government level, and really implement a meaningful project. So we now have run education programs in schools in Bintan in Indonesia, where we built our first project. We are also building on working with the governments over there as well, and building those relationships and being more meaningful to those relationships. And that's just in Indonesia. And in Thailand, for example, we've recently signed an MOU or a memorandum of understanding, so a collaboration with a Buddhist monk temple that are already turning the PET bottles they collect from the surrounding communities into their monk robes. So it's working with organizations like that on the community level that really build trust in Seven Clean Seas, that we are going to come in and are going to solve the problem, but also shows that actually we understand where you're coming from and we understand your issues, and we can solve this together, not just bulldozing down and saying, yeah, this is how you solve it, and this is what we do. Yeah, I think it's a level of empathy that I think all impact startups or whatever.
I totally agree with startups. You. Yeah, I think that's absolutely essential, and it's part of that theory of change, isn't it? That you can't impose change on people. It's a collaborative process. So my next question before we go to the business side of things was really around, how did you get to find those communities to work with? Like, how did you end up working with them then? Where did that come from?
That is a brilliant question. So where do I start on this one? The company was founded back in 2019, and we just started working on, you know, working with corporates doing CSR beach cleanups. So we were working with some fantastic companies, tech companies in Singapore, multinational corporations, but we were just taking them down to beaches in Singapore and being like, this is the problem here. Do something about it. I don't know, go back to your offices and spend the rest of your day in your cubicle or whatever. And I think we realized very quickly that we weren't going to solve the plastic pollution problem by doing just education. That's really where we then kind of evolved the strategy into, okay, well, how do we look more systemically at the problem? Evolve different revenue streams to support the on-the-ground projects, which is where we ended up. So we were executing on the strategy, measure, reduce, offset, until we got to the strategy that we're in at the moment. We're working with a brilliant organization called Nicoen Chempedak Island. Highly suggest you go check them out. And in 2020, we then found that Bintan actually struggled quite badly with plastic pollution. Andrew had a great network over in Indonesia after building these two eco resorts. And he first introduced us to a lady called Siti Kusmiati, who is now our general manager of Indonesia. And she had previously some fantastic roles in NGOs across Indonesia and really understood kind of Bintan and the communities as a whole. And after meeting with her, understanding kind of our vision as founders, saying, look, this is what we want to achieve. We want no plastic in the ocean. She then really took that idea and grew it from that community level. Now we have an operating materials recovery facility, which is painted bright yellow in a small community called Kawa on the east side of Bintan. And she now has all the connections with the various government entities and the local communities, and then has hired from those local communities as well. So that's how it happened, very organically, but I think based off network and based off people we know and hiring someone who was very pivotal to understanding the problem in that location, we now have this very successful project, which gets really great receptiveness from the communities as well.
Yeah. It's the relationality always makes sense, doesn't it? When you have a relationship there and when someone gets it, it's not like you going in at someone who's from a place, who understands a place, can come in. I also had a question. What do you do with the stuff? Like when you collect it all, what do you do with it?
Circularity is a major focus for us in 2024. We have a newsletter, and in that newsletter, we've committed to, you know, building out these circular solutions, because what we do with the plastic is a very hot topic. Because in these rural and island locations, typically there's no waste collection, there's no recycling facilities, and a lot of the material that we do collect is so dirty and so covered in sand and biomaterial that, you know, we'd have to wash everything, dry it out, even just to send it to an incinerator. So a lot of the waste that is generated on these islands from these communities goes directly to these government-run landfills. So when we first started the project, we identified this as a huge, huge issue. Okay, well, this is a, you know, somewhat valuable material, but what do we do with it? So with our facility, we now collect up all that plastic, and we sort and separate that plastic into PET, HDP, so milk cartons, so PET water bottles, HDP like milk cartons, PP like shampoo cartons, etc. Sometimes, and we separate into the recyclable material, which we then store, and then look at kind of end of life solutions for those, as well as then flexible material, and the almost the non-recyclable material that can't be kind of mechanically recycled. That non-recyclable material is something we're doing some really exciting stuff with it this year. So we're firstly going to be looking at turning it into bricks, and we've already started testing on that. Right. And those bricks will be then kind of given back to the communities. So construction materials, and we're getting those kind of strength tested as well. And then the second one is actually turning non-recyclable plastic into the corrugated roof tiles. So, you know, the corrugated material that you quite often see, currently that corrugated material, they use asbestos in a lot of these communities. And asbestos, if you don't know, not just to you but to everyone, is actually a banned material in a lot of places. And I think we identified immediately that actually we can just create the non-recyclable material into these kind of corrugated roof tiles and then just replace them in the communities. So replacing that kind of non-recyclable roof tile with the asbestos roof tile,
and then that's safe to collect water off.
Yeah, I mean, potentially. But I didn't even think about that, actually, to be honest. We haven't tested it, but I'll let the guys know on the ground to see what they can do.
Yeah.
But that's a really good idea.
Sorry, that's my permaculture brain coming in.
No, it's all good. I love it. but no, so in terms of circularity, it's been a really complex issue, right? Because again, I'm going to come back and say this works for the places that we've been operating in so far, but we don't know whether we expand into South America or somewhere in Africa or somewhere else with a plastic pollution problem, that's going to necessarily be the correct solution for that area. So it's also, again, understanding, okay, what can we do? What's the current situation? What do people want? What do the communities want? What's that theory of change? And then moving on that and then committing to that.
It's really exciting too, isn't it? When, you know, one, there is the movement of cleaning it up and having an option of doing something about it. Because I'm pretty sure people don't really like their places being completely messed up, but don't have an option of what to do with it. I mean, I know from my time in Indonesia as well that you either burn it or bury it, and there's only so much places you can bury it, and there's only so many gullies you can fill up with the rubbish, and then you start burning it, and then you get the lung diseases. So having an opportunity where there's some other way of dealing with this waste is such a huge thing. And also if there can be a livelihood attached to that. So if people can start making bricks and selling them, that's a little new enterprise that can be set up. And that's really exciting.
Yeah. And we need to strength test the bricks first. So we're going through that process. But the corrugated roof tiles, you know, that project's already underway. So we're really, really excited about it for 2024. But I won't talk too much about it because you have to sign up for the newsletter to find out more.
Yes. We'll put all the links below for everyone listening. So all the social media links, all the links that you've mentioned, we'll drop them into the show notes below. So check that out. But I wanted to talk to you about your business relationships and your partnerships there and how that works, and reading too in your work that you have a really interesting business model, and that, you know, you're really working towards creating sort of this plastic neutrality. So instead of going carbon zero, you're going plastic zero. Do you want to just walk us through like what your business model is for this? Because I think it's fascinating. If we can all be starting to think about how our businesses and enterprises can be making an impact in such a positive way, that'd be brilliant. And how we can support your impact business. Yeah.
I love it. Absolutely love it. To explain this in the most entertaining way for listeners is through how we landed on this kind of business model, I guess, and this kind of revenue generating stream that goes directly into projects and supporting those projects. So back in 2018, 2019, when we were doing the CSR cleanups, like I mentioned earlier, for some fantastic companies, a German fair trade condom company called Einhorn called us up and said, "Hey guys, look, you know, we've seen your work. You're doing beach cleanups. It's awesome, but we have to use plastic in our products, obviously, else you get a lot of unhappy people. So we have to use plastic in our products, but we can't remove that plastic. Is there any way that we can pay you to remove the same amount of plastic that we use in 1 year and remove that directly from the ocean by supporting your projects?" And I think for us, that was really the light bulb moment.
Yeah.
And Einhorn, we've worked with them ever since. They're a fantastic company. Please check them out. Their branding is amazing. That was really where this kind of idea of plastic offset came from. So taking a company's necessary plastic usage in 1 year and removing it from the ocean on their behalf. Because what that does is allows us to then build projects in areas where previously it wasn't economically viable, but then also expand on those projects and have more money to invest in people and more money to invest in technologies that recycles those plastics and collects those plastics. So that's our main revenue stream. And plastic offsets or plastic credits back then, you know, that market didn't exist at all. And fast forward now to 2024 even, and you have multiple verification standards, you've got multiple auditors going out and auditing our projects, you have a market where other people are trading plastic credits, we have competitors now, which is absolutely fantastic, because it's building the market, more money coming into this area and this sector, and more money ultimately getting down to the people that need it most and the causes that need it most, and collecting plastic from the ocean. So that's plastic credits. In addition to that, I think with the scrutiny that the carbon credit market went under, we looked at the plastic credit market and said, we are the founding members of this. And, you know, I have a responsibility as a founder of a plastic credit company to say how we build this market. And that's really where we then said, okay, well, if we're offsetting people's plastics, we can't just let them tell us how much it is. We need to understand how much they're using in their operations first, then help them reduce, because you get that systemic effect, and then and only then offset the plastic. So a perfect example of this is a wonderful project that we did with the Supreme Committee of Delivery and Legacy on the FIFA World Cup 2022. So we actually work with them to make them the world's first plastic neutral tournament. Hopefully that work that we did with them on building that world's first methodology to measure plastic at a mega event, then helping them reduce, and then finally making them plastic neutral by removing the same amount of plastic from the ocean that they used at the event. Hopefully that builds a legacy for mega events and says, actually, you know what, guys, let's build off this methodology. Let's make an impact at these events, a positive impact at these events, and also start measuring your plastic. So that's the business model. That's how we earn money. And that's how we support the projects on the ground that we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast as well.
Can I ask you then, like, how much is a plastic credit, like for 1,000 kilograms, or like how do you measure it? Like, is there a standard cost, or like how does it work?
For one plastic credit, that's the equivalent of removing 1,000 kilos of plastic from the marine environment. It's the same as carbon, right? Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the costings, it's a little bit different. Costings vary anywhere from $500 per credit all the way up to, I think I've seen like 16 euros per kilo, or 1,600 euros per kilo. So a huge range on that at the moment. It's all with varying impacts and varying project standards as well. So with our projects that we build, you know, we make sure there's no child labor, there's no informal labor in that. Everyone's on permanent contracts, and, you know, we can be transparent about how we've collected that plastic and where we've collected that plastic from and who's employed. Like, you can come down to the projects and meet the people that we're employing. And then with that comes obviously then the varying cost ranges. But I will say, you know, we're not quite as much as the end scale, 16,000 euros or something like that, on the end to remove 1,000 kilos of plastic. But I think, you know, it's a varying market. You can get a range of different prices out there. But just always double check with 7 Clean Seas if you're going to buy plastic credits, and we'll tell you if you're getting a good deal or not.
Yeah. So for example, say if there was a school listening to this and the school itself wanted to sign up, do you have any schools that sign up, or is it mostly businesses?
No, it's actually mostly businesses. We don't have any schools just yet. So if there is a school headmaster listening to this, you know, you could be the first. It could be revolutionary for your sustainability report.
People who listen to this podcast who kind of look after whole districts of school. You know, you can imagine the whole districts of school thinking about it, or, you know, people who supply hospitals with all the stuff, and there's so much gear in that. And I just wonder, how do you work it out with them, and how do they get in touch with you about that? Do you do like some assessment with them, like run me the how-to bit?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they're two very different industries. In the schools and in the school districts, and would look at each facility individually and build a methodology custom to your business to be able to measure that plastic pollution. From there, we would then suggest reduction strategies, and, you know, in some circumstances, in some industries, help implement those reduction strategies so you can reduce the plastic overall across your supply chain, across the amount of plastic that you use in your schools. Once you've measured that, once you've reduced that, essentially doing that assessment, we would then look at kind of compensating for that waste that you're using, or the plastic waste that you're using, and then remove it on your behalf from our projects. And we would issue you with those certificates, and you'd be on board as a 7 Clean Seas partner. For the hospitals, you know, I love those types of companies, like companies that medical device companies that are very necessary plastics used in those for hygiene. So measurement side of things, you know, that assessment is actually relatively easy for the supply chain, and we've done that multiple times before with different product industries. Then the reduction side is a little bit difficult when it comes to medical, because of all the regulation that comes with kind of the medical industry. So I'm not sure on the strategies for reduction in that. We've got a team internally that researches and delves into that. But if it's all necessary plastic, we then look at kind of making those hospital devices plastic neutral, and removing that same amount of weight that you use in your supply chain directly from the oceans. So it starts with a very basic kind of assessment. And if you want a more in-depth assessment, that then comes with kind of building methodologies and building strategies around that. The really exciting aspect of the measurement or the plastic assessment is that we've just kind of joined something called the Plastic Footprint Network, which is almost a thought leadership basis for building these methodologies and really pushing these methodologies out so that everyone's using the same methodology and everyone has to measure their plastic footprint. So I think that's really, really exciting. And I'm keeping an eye on kind of how the measurement side of kind of the business and the world goes in the next couple of years as well. I'm really, really pumped for that.
Super exciting. And have you got any collaborations with universities who are working with research with you on this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We have a lot of interest on that side. I don't deal with any of the researchers. Okay. So that's on the technical side of things. Yeah. So Ollie, our technical director, he handles that, that side of stuff. So if you do want to reach out to him, we're going to absolutely kind of do him over here. So Ollie@7cleanseas.com. If you're a researcher, drop him a message. He will absolutely love it as well. So he's got a full research background, just lives for it really. And does a lot of our university projects on a few things now, in terms of data on the plastic waste that we've collected, plastic footprinting methodologies, multitude of projects on the research side. So reach out to him if you're interested in that one.
Right. Thank you.
Don't reach out to me. I'm useless.
That's super exciting. I meant to ask you at the start, though, like, how did you get into this? Were you always interested in the oceans? Were you always in the ocean? Where's the thread of connection? Because often it's like something really meaningful for us that helps us to get into something so deeply like this.
Yeah, you know, if you're listening to this and you're trying to get into the sustainability space and or you just want to build something good for the planet, you know, I just stumbled into this sector. You are right. I've been surfing the majority of my life. I've got a very close connection with the ocean. I'm originally from the UK and I didn't really think anything of it about my connection with the ocean and me surfing and until I got to university, where in my final year I focused my entire attention on plastics and how plastics affected biodiversity across the intertidal range of the sunny United Kingdom coast. So I was going down to the beach, you know, and collecting plastics along the UK coastline for that research. As I got into research, I really, really loved it. But I think the section that I always missed was, how do I take what I'm doing and make systemic change and apply it to the private sector where I can, you know, generate funding to create an impact? And I think at university, you do miss out on that side of things, especially in biology or especially in marine biology. There's so many great minds there that if they applied kind of a business context to what they're doing, they could change so much about a sector. And that's really what happened to me is when I left university, I went straight to Singapore. I started working in a couple startups until I met Tom, my business partner now. He founded 7 Clean Seas early 2018, and I met him early 2019, and that was really the moment for me when I was like, actually, you know, you can build something that's good for the planet and generate revenue to then support that thing. That was really how the story started of my personal story of really trying to understand, okay, well, actually, I can take my experience in university and apply it to a real life scenario. Now, saying that, it's a very unique scenario because I understand a lot of people study something and end up in something completely different. So it just so happened that I, you know, loved the ocean, loved plastics in a weird way, and then managed to marry those two to build a company.
I think it's such an inspiring story, Ben, really, because, you know, I meet a lot of people, like I have three kids myself who are not quite your age yet, but the eldest is 17. So I meet a lot of people through the PermaUse network as well. And I hear many people saying, this is what I want to spend my life doing, something that's really positive for the planet, something that's going to be enabled me to make a contribution, but I'm not quite sure how to step into that. So this idea of startups and impact, you know, companies, like, I think this is really exciting. You can actually design something that helps you to do what you love to do. I mean, this, I think, is really vital information for people.
100%. I'll say the advice that I gave to my sister. It worked for me. It might not work for anyone else, but I think it's you know, find find a startup that's doing something that you can get on board with. Whether or not sustainability is up to you, but I think just find a mission that you really care about. AI is quite hot at the moment, isn't it? So find a mission that a startup, you know, you really care about, because then working in that startup won't feel like, you know, it's so chaotic, it's so fast paced. Then you're building this company and building this really awesome thing towards this mission, and you gain so much experience off the back of that. You know, then maybe you can start something yourself, or maybe you do expand your knowledge on that one particular area. So join a startup and learn as much as possible about the one thing that you really care about. Because I really don't think that you then get stuck in that kind of one specific role either that you might do in a large corporate environment. So
that's really great advice. And I wanted to pick up on something you mentioned way, way, way earlier, which was talking about you were a startup, but maybe you're not so much a startup now, you're a scale up. Like, what happened in the bit? Like, what did you do that? Like, how did you get past the startup stage and to this scale up stage?
Good question. To be honest, I don't know at what point where you consider yourself a startup to a scale up. I'm still in like startup mode in my head. I'm like, okay, you gotta innovate, dodge loads of bullets, put out loads of fires. But I think you we transitioned from a startup to a scale up with the sheer amount of people that we employed. I think, you know, startups are quite scrappy, very little governance structures usually. When we were building our first impact project in Bintan and we had City on board and Ollie and a few other people, then we were a startup. As soon as we expanded to our second location and then our third location, almost simultaneously, actually, that's really where we started to scale up, because we hit about 60 employees. So that's with collectors and HQ team. And then it was exponential. We're now at just over 100 employees on payroll at Seven Clean Seas. And that's with all the collectors that we formerly employ as well. So, I think then we had to get in governance structures and make sure that everyone's doing the right role and doing everything correctly. And I think that's when I noticed, okay, all right, there's a fundamental shift in something that I've built here. And I'm going to have to adapt now as well and say, okay, I've got to be more structured in my day, et cetera. So I think that's really where I noticed, okay, we're not a startup anymore. We're
you're serious. You're doing some amazing things and you're really reaching out further. Yeah, congratulations. It's such an amazing story. What's the call to action? Like you did say at the start, like you're mostly focused on businesses, but you also said individuals can get involved. So
yeah.
Is there, like, if someone's listening and they're going, oh, I'd love to offset my plastics because I do have these.
I'd start very simple, firstly, you know, nothing to do with Seven Clean Seas. Just if you're listening to this and you never really considered plastics as an issue, focus on how much plastic you use in your everyday life, then try and reduce that. And just change those small habits that ultimately make a massive impact. The second thing to do with Seven Clean Seas is that if you're a business and you have no idea how much waste you're actually generating, please reach out, because you will have a huge impact by partnering with Seven Clean Seas to be able to measure that, reduce that, and then generate some positive on the ground social impact. And if you're an individual looking to remove plastic from the ocean, you can reach out to us anyway. And if you're doing something cool within sustainability, we can highlight that, we can spotlight that. We have a number of social media channels that we can communicate your story on as well. So please reach out. And if you want to offset your plastic on an individual basis, we don't have that on this website, but we're going to go through a rendition of a website very soon. So keep an eye out on that one. And then hopefully
sign
on that new website.
Sign up to the newsletter and you'll hear about that. That's the lesson.
Sign up to the... Thank you so much for plugging that. I love that. And don't forget to sign up to the newsletter.
When you're doing so much and there's so many projects here, there and everywhere, and there's so many new things coming through all the time, I think it's great. I think it's really important. I love getting newsletters from all around different places and seeing where the edge of, you know, innovation is happening. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. No, it's really awesome. Marketing would kill me if I didn't mention it as well. So.
Well, look, it's been absolutely fabulous chatting with you today, Ben, and I'm just so impressed with the way in which you've shaped something like, you know, the carbon credits and shifting it to plastic credits, taking something that's so personal into something that's become very, you know, like it's a political action. And I don't mean as in like a, you know, like going out and yelling about it, but it is shifting policy. It is shifting the way people think about it. When I say politics, I think it's something that's actually people changing. It's actually bringing people along on the journey and shifting, you know, narratives in business too. I think that's super exciting. That's really
nice.
You know, like that's where the source of most of the plastics are coming from. And if it actually helps people think different, and I, you know, I really do believe that people in their heart actually really do want to make a difference, but just don't know how to do it.
Yes, so I completely
agree. You're an enabler to do that. So thank you.
No, thank you so much for helping me tell my story. You know, at the end of the day, we need people to help tell our stories, and this is one of the ways to do it. So I appreciate that.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Sense Making in a Changing World. Check out the show notes below to find links to Ben Moody's work at Seven Clean Seas. And also check out the notes for where to find details of our permaculture courses, our YouTube blog, free masterclasses and film club. And make sure you're signed up to hear the news and updates. And come and join us at the Permaculture Education Institute to learn practical skills for designing and teaching permaculture and making a good livelihood while living a permaculture-inspired one planet way of life. Take care. I look forward to seeing you in coming episodes.